Okay, we'll probably switch the battery out. So anyway, I just want to make you aware of that. I'm sure you already are, but it's my duty to sort of inform and make sure you have a strategy. And maybe today some of the tips that we'll have, and I'll be glad to talk to you offline as well, how we decided to handle this issue. But let's kind of get started here. Why should we talk about communication? You know, we are veterinarians. We are scientists by nature, and some would argue by design. And so talking to people, communicating with people, what's that got to do with any of this stuff? It has everything to do with how effective you are as a doctor. You can be the greatest diagnostician, the greatest technician, the greatest practice manager, receptionist, whatever, and if you have poor or marginal or even average communication style, that's as good as you are. I don't care how brilliant you are, it's what you convey that counts. And we're going to share with you today some of the things. Now, I was involved very heavily with the KPMG mega study, and many of you may have seen even lectures I gave. I did the portion on what they identified as self-esteem issues within our profession. And I really retermed it professional esteem because, there are some other reasons for that. But basically, when we looked at the KPMG mega study, we found that top two reasons why people chose us. Number one, any veterinarian, if you're kind and gentle, respectful and informative. So, interestingly, the members of the committee and different people that were involved with this said, hey, man, we got this thing covered. We've got the communication aspect down. And I said, wait a second. Not so fast here. Because this implies choice. And they chose us on the top two things that had to do with communication. So this tells me they were choosing their veterinarian not on their surgical skills, not on their diagnostic abilities, not on how high-tech the equipment was, but on how well you communicated. This was huge. Now, suddenly people saw the data in a very different light, and they started to go, oh my gosh, you're right. So I say, if you will focus on communication on every level, from doctors to if you do boarding and grooming, kennel type, whatever, if you will focus on that, you will see unmeasured success in your practice. There are certain filters that you need to be aware of that you have little control over. I'm a scrawny man. I can't change that. I guess I could if I went to Sweden and had a type of operation, perhaps. But there are going to be people that will filter me negatively or positively based on just how I look. Just how I look. And in Malcolm Gladwell's great book, Blink, which came out a couple of years ago, and many of you have seen me do lectures on Blink, but you know, he says, hey, this happens instantaneously. And we're going to talk more about this as the day progresses. But gender, age, size, some people want to... capable and competent. Do you feel capable and competent discussing brain tumor radiation with a client? No, me either. I don't know the first thing about it. I know that they take radiation and they zap you're in your brain. Sounds kind of scary to me. So we send her to a specialist. This guy's supposed to be top. We send him up. The very next day, I have an appointment for a consultation. It's the person I just sent up there. Like, what the heck's going on? Go into the exam room. Now, they're paying for this, of course. I go into the exam room. And they said, Dr. Ward, I got to tell you, and I'm just going to abbreviate the whole conversation. I got to tell you, I don't know if that guy knew what he was talking about or not. Now, Stephen, I have zero doubt in my mind that this individual knows what... This person is top, man. The publications, the research, this guy is good. He knows about radiation brain tumor. The problem was he relied on the 7%. And the people were like, I'm not touching... No. I don't go there. $5,000. They're willing to spend this, Daniel. No problem. The money was not the issue. Didn't trust it. And as I began to sort of investigate and ask questions, and I'm one for discussing how they communicated, I started to notice, and we're going to point out here later, all of the nonverbal cues that this highly esteemed academician, researcher, expert, specialist made. So today, you're not going to make these mistakes after you get done with these. So if we look at the tone, inflection, and rate, again, if you've been listening to me, I've been varying all of this because I have to make certain things more dramatic, certain things more serious. What did I just do there? I varied the tone and the rate of speaking. And I also did a downward inflection and upward inflection. The cool thing about this is you are in complete control of this. How many of you, most of you are far too young to remember President JFK, John F. Kennedy? Okay? But John F. Kennedy is arguably one of the greatest orators of our time. Larry, would you agree? I mean, his speeches were riveting. He moved people just with the sound of his voice. Well, JFK, again, arguably, is a naturally gifted communicator. I mean, he came from a long line of very successful people, and it seems like all the rest of them have done a pretty good job, so naturally gifted. So you'd say, well, you know, I'm not JFK, Stephen says. I'm not JFK. I wasn't born into this family, went to these schools and all this stuff. Here's the interesting thing about JFK. Granted, he was great, brilliant, naturally. They said for every minute of a speech that he gave, he rehearsed an hour. Think about it, man. 30 minutes. I've got to do 7 hours of lectures today, okay? And trust me, you must rehearse. You must practice. So you have control of this. Remember, if people say they want a kind and gentle doctor, you've got to make sure you're speaking softer and slower many times. But Stephen, in the busy hurly-burly of the day, we get busy and we know that we got 18,000 people waiting on us. And what happens to our rate of speaking? It goes up. What happens to your respiratory rate? It goes up. What happens to your heart rate? Through the roof sometimes. And all of those things give it away. And now the person's sitting there going, I don't know if I trust them or not. I don't know if I feel good about this person or not. And I just did something there that you're going to pick up on in just a few minutes that showed you how that person is. Vocabulary. Dan, use medical terms. People are paying for it, so I believe strongly in using medical terms. But back it up. What was your first name again?
Amanda.
Miss Beal, that's her last name. Mrs. Beal, you know, our biggest concern today is that Scooter has been diagnosed with a disease called hyperadrenocorticism. Now, that's a fancy word that simply means that the body is producing too much of cortisol, which is sort of like cortisone, a steroid. What did I just do? Use the medical term. If you dumb it down, Mrs. Beal, today, I'm sorry to tell you that we're most concerned about your dog having a disease where it just makes too much steroid. You've heard of like cortisone shots. If you dumb it down, you do run the risk of not being authoritative. People do expect for you to use the $20 words sometimes, but don't fall into jargon. Another mistake the specialist made. Dr. Ward, he used words we couldn't even pronounce. We couldn't even understand what he was saying. He never backed it up, Dan. He never went that next step and said, this is what this really means. This is the real essence of what I'm trying to say. And he loses them. You start slipping into jargon, Hardeep. And, you know, and this is really a struggle with younger veterinarians, right? Because they've just been filled with Ettinger, right? It's crammed in there for 4 years. And all of a sudden they want to go, Ettinger. You know, they want to just spit out all of this stuff. And they feel good about it. But you have to take your young associates aside and say, we have to make sure that we're not falling into just medical terminology. Because your clients are going to be like, phew. Easiest way to do that? Track compliance. Be watching what your associates are doing. Watch the number of advanced procedures. Now, I'm not talking about blood tests on a vomiting dog. I'm talking about when you're doing surveys for Cushing's disease, you know, or whatever. Track it, track it, track it. Stay informative. That means, you know, stay on topic. It's great, and you know, there's always going to be a little bit of chit-chat and small talk, Stephen, but the reality is you don't have a lot of time for catching up on the surfing or talking about whatever. One little bit of caution. As a consultant, I certainly have heard this when I go into your clinic sometimes. But, Hardeev, many times the veterinarian is talking chit-chat about themselves. It can become very self-centered all of a sudden because you're very proud. You just did your first Ironman or whatever, and you want to share it with the world. And suddenly, you've lost track. And people walk out of there going, well, yeah, I guess he's really proud of himself for doing whatever. Okay? Avoid fillers. I'm going to talk about how do you identify fillers at the end of this session, but fillers are very important. They will sabotage you. Content and context. Again, that's the less of all of these. Make sure that the client follows you. We're going to talk about body language here, especially in the next hour. But avoid being tangential. Young doctors tend to stray, Stephen. Well, we're talking about hyperadrenocorticism, and then they go off onto experimental, you know, drugs, you know. Talk about radiation therapy, maybe. You know, I don't know. Okay? This is how we would do it, and blah, blah, blah. Use silence to emphasize points. Been doing this throughout the talk. Mr. Miller, there are really three main rule-outs I'm concerned about today with your dog. And I know how much you care about Scooter. What am I doing there? Does that sound serious already? In fact, you probably are sitting there going, he's about to say cancer or something, right? Did you not feel that? And that was simply lowering the tone, downward inflection, slowing the rate, using silence, using pauses. In drama, those of you thespians out there will know this is a caesura. It's a dramatic pause. And it is highly effective. Highly effective. Repeat it. Repeat it. Repeat it. Repeat it. Repeat it. Repeat it. How many times did I just repeat that? Six times, because you have to say it about six times throughout the course of this. Almost all research says that if they hear it six times, they walk out of there and they at least got that that was an important thing. So our appointment workflow is basically built around that premise. So that we make sure that we have different contact points, different people, because I like different perspective, different language. But we make sure if we want to talk to you about dentistry, you're going to hear this six times. And that's one of the reasons why our compliance rates are so high. You know, that's very important. And reinforce it, because they've got to go home. The words, they forget. What do they say in vet school? You know, because you're smart, you remember about a third of the lecture, right? So that meant I did about half of that, so I got 15%. But I could go home and read the notes, right? Do you guys realize now in veterinary school that the lectures are optional for many of these students? They actually just download the notes? Yeah. I'm not going to name the school. I was just there. And they're like, yeah, we don't even have to show up to class. It's like, wow, where was that when I was around, you know? Because, again, what have they found? What have they found, Dan? Everyone, turn in your notes to page 242. As you can see on the slide, this slide depicts pulmonary edema. In the anterior... What is that? That's not effective. Is that inspirational? I'd rather just read the notes, Larry. I'd rather just go and do it on my own. Because these professors don't want to be up there either. It's another big issue. Big, one of my little soapbox things. Let's talk a little bit about nonverbal now. We're going to really get into it in the next hour. But guess what? I don't care if you're French. I don't care if you're Canadian. Well, maybe not Canadian. I don't care if you're American, Swahili, you're in the rainforest of the Amazon. If you're a human being, Homo sapiens sapiens, you smile when you're happy and you frown when you're sad. That's amazing research, if you think about it. Because that tells you that we are tied through some very core, hardwired communication points. Now, I've been mentioning all these rules, 55, 7, 38, all this stuff. Well, where did this come from? Dr. Albert Mehrabian, who is absolutely was considered the founding father of nonverbal communication, did all the early studies in the late 60s and early 70s. And in his still required reading, Nonverbal Communication, which is still taught at all the schools, he posted his research. And he found, hey, 7% of the message, verbal channels, 55% is nonverbal, which is gestures, posture, facial expression. And this was groundbreaking in 1972 because up to that time, you know, nobody had really even thought about, well, the Italians, they talk with their hands. What does this mean? Nobody had even made the connection between you, the receiver, and how you uptake the information versus how I administer or deliver or transmit. This is pretty cool stuff if you think about it. Why is this? Why are we so much more in tune to nonverbal, Asa? Why the nonverbal? Because we've been communicating nonverbally for millions of years. Language, spoken language, is a relatively new thing. Written is even harder. How many of you guys like to write stuff? You know? I mean, You talk to students today. Okay, guys, I've got an option for you. You can either write a 6-page essay or you can discuss this oral exam with your professor. What do students take? 5-1. The oral, yeah. Nobody wants to write. It's so much harder. And verbal is the same way. But we are hardwired. We're a little Coco, you know, little Coco the gorillas. I mean, we know certain things mean certain things, okay? And we're hardwired to learn that. Now let's talk about that. Body language is everything you do. How you move within the space, which how you even define that space. Where you look, when you look, and how you look when you look. And I like to tell my staff, a whole lot of things that we have yet to even discover. And that's why Daniel Goleman's things are even more fascinating, because his premise is, wait a second, there are literally electromagnetic waves being sent out from your body and your brain, and how you are thinking is influencing other people. And they've got fMRI data to back this up. They take two people, all right, and they put one in an fMRI, you know, a functional MRI, and the other person across the room, and they have them talk through speakers, okay, which is not, again, they don't get the nonverbal. But they find that those people's brainwaves sync almost immediately. This is fast. You should read Goldman's stuff. I mean, it's like, why? Why do they sync? You know, once they were out, and then why all of a sudden, why? We don't know. We don't know. But there's something to it. So I'd be aware. Watch this research, Larry, too, because you deal with the public. So let's first of all focus on what you should avoid when it comes to that. Number one, don't cross your arms. Don't cross any part of your body language. If you're in the audience right now, I want you to do an exercise for me. I want you to raise your hands above you. Raise your hands. And if you don't do it, you can go out and go. Okay? Raise your hands. Now set them down in your lap. And I want you to keep them there for the rest of the thing. Because if you're sitting there listening to this lecture, in the next hour especially, and you have your arms closed, we're going to talk about conflict too towards the end of the day. If you have your arms closed, I have almost no shot of reaching you. Now, I will tell you one other funny thing, and I don't know that I agree with this, but many of the psychologists will say, Stephen, that if you feel compelled to, you know, you have your hands crossed like this, and experiment with yourself. But have you ever noticed, like, after a while, you kind of do it a little tighter, a little tighter, and a little tighter, and you're like giving yourself a hug? Well, then they say these people, you know, their mother hugged them, right? Well, they didn't get enough mother hugs or whatever, so they go into a self-hug. When I tell that to audiences, nobody ever crosses their arm again, you know, because I'm not damaged. No, not me. No, my mama hugged me, you know. So, Stephen, but it's interesting because we're going to talk later about how do I get the client to uncross their arm, especially in terms of conflict and things. So we got some cool stuff coming up for you. But don't cross your arm. Crossed body simply says, I'm not interested. It simply says, again, to the limbic system, which we'll go into more in the next hour, that part of your brain that's blink, 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 thin slicing, whatever terminology you want to use, it's sizing you up instantly. It's saying, you're not interested. I mean, you know, and Dr. Stacy is a beautiful young lady. But that, of course, and I've got her doing some other things, which we'll talk about more with her eyes, but that sends the wrong signal. And yet, if you think about it, Marcus Welby, MD, was famous for walking into the room like this. And it almost feels authoritative, you know. Well, I'll tell you, Mrs. Smith. I mean, these are powerful postures, we think. They are powerful to you. To the other person, they're saying, you're not so important, you know. So always, and we're going to talk about open body language. Think like an opening flower. Don't cross your arms. Don't frown, lip bite. Excessive eye aversion. I will tell you one little misconception. Oh, a liar, they won't look you in the eye. Wrong. Liars are smart. They look you in the eye even more. Okay? So, and there are some things we'll talk about with the eyes later on, what you're doing with your eyes when you're doing it. But just remember that you've got to maintain good eye contact. I mean, when I'm speaking to you guys, I can't help it because I can't communicate with you unless I'm looking at you. All right? That's why the front row always gets showered with the love, right? You feel the love, Larry? All right. That's good. Lip biting and frowning. Nobody does that. Everybody says they don't do it. I'm going to show you how you find out if you're doing it, because you're doing it and you don't know it. Playing or twirling with your hair. You know, and it's real easy to say, I don't do that. I don't do that. Again, I'm going to give you some techniques to prove it to yourself. Anytime your hands go near your face when you're speaking, it's simply concealment. You guys remember this president, Bill Clinton? Anybody remember Bill Clinton? So, are you familiar? I know you're from Canada, but he's from Canada, so he's a famous president. Okay. All right. So anyway, Bill Clinton has to testify before the grand jury. Do you guys remember this little scandal that rocked the nation? Yeah, the Monica Lewinsky? Right. So he has to go before the grand jury. And as you know, that was a closed session. So the American public and the world, for that matter, would have never seen it except for one jury member could not be there that day and requested that it was videotaped. Okay. So, a month after he testifies, the tape is made public, as it should be. And instantly, these images are broadcast all over the world. Right? You remember. I mean, it was like headline, breaking news. This was a big deal. Well, there was a group in Chicago of researchers who started to review this tape very, very closely, as did many people. And they started to notice some peculiarities. Because what did we want to see the tape for? Is he lying or not? Yeah. Right? Isn't that what you wanted to know? That's what I wanted to know. Did he have relations with that woman or not? Well, these people are trained. And they started noticing a pattern of things. And I will caution you that no matter what you're doing nonverbally, I like to use the term congruence. It means that you can do one thing, like you can be crossed arms, but if everything else is positive, it may be okay. It's just now if you're crossing your arms and you're averting your eyes and your chin is down and your feet are pointed away, which we're going to get into more detail next hour. But if you're doing all these things in a package, now I'm distrustful. Well, an interesting fact is this. When you are lying, when you're under stress, blood flow to the capillaries of the nose increases. How many of you guys watch 24? Anybody watch 24? Okay. Recently, they interrogated Graham, Jack Bauer's brother, right? You remember? He was a bad guy. And if you remember, they put a camera, and they had another guy with a laptop computer, and what was he looking at? A thermal imaging scan, okay? And so what was that doing? They were detecting heat on his face. And so they would ask him a question. He has a 76% chance that he's lying, okay? And these things, there's a guy named Dr. Ekman who is, this stuff, I hate to tell you this, but in about 2 years from now, when we go through these new scanners, because the scanners, they aren't telling you the whole story yet, they're imaging your body heat. Because they've got now software from Dan Ekman that's just phenomenal. That's detecting if you're nervous, upset, or whatever. And then you may get pulled for more screening. But anyway, if you have increased blood flow to the capillaries of your nose, what do you think you do? Okay. You ever done that before? You ever, gotten wiped around there? Bill Clinton touched his nose 26 times during his testimony. Now, I'm not going to say he's telling the truth or lying. I'm going to simply say he touched his nose 26 times. And now, as you know, that may be indicative of the lying, untruth, nervousness, whatever. When confronted with this, and now everybody's going to touch their nose now because you can see, you know, I'm like the same way because now I have power of suggestion. When questioned about this, Bill Clinton's handler simply replied, he was under such stress, anyone would have done the same. Maybe, maybe not. Just be aware. Hands near your face send the wrong thing. If you are Coco the gorilla in the wild and you meet a strange animal or another gorilla or a person, what does Coco do? What's the first thing they do? Hands towards the face and they crouch down. They're going to support in a position, and what they want to do also is conceal what? What's the first thing gorillas do when they are nervous or angry? I just did it. You can do it. You can tell me. It's okay. We're all friends here. Yeah, they bare their teeth, and they do this out of fear or out of aggression. And so what do they want to say? I'm not showing you my hand just yet. I don't want to maybe provoke an attack. So hands near the face, concealment. It's pretty simple, hardwired in us. And Judy, you're not conscious of it. You're not sitting there going, oh, I just noticed. He touched his nose 5 times. Look to the left 3 times. Oh, and now he's put his hand near his face. You don't notice these things. Your limbic system does. You're hardwired to do this. Okay? Eyes glancing upward and to the left. Now, all new research supports that, and I'm going to give you an easy way to remember this, that if you are right-handed in particular, and for most left-handed people this is true as well, if you glance upward and to the left, you are imagining something. And think about yourself when you're talking. When you're thinking about, you know, gosh, I can't wait to go to Hawaii. You know, I'm going to Hawaii in a few weeks. You know, I can't wait. So you start to glance upward to the left. Okay? Imagination. If you are remembering something, Stephen, I got to tell you, man, I was at the airport. You tend to glance upward and to the right. So right, remembered. Left, imagination. So what do you think if I'm... Did you have relations with that woman? Well, no, I didn't. Upwards and to the left is imagining. And I'll tell you, the good liars are absolutely... it'll be a quick, fleeting dart. But, you know, it's interesting. Ekman's research, and he has some cool online things. And if you're really interested in this, if you'll email me, I'll be glad to send you websites and links to these self-tests you can take. And literally, in about a half of a second, you can detect this stuff. You don't even know why. They just simply say, was this person being truthful or not? They don't even ask a question. You just give them your gut feeling, and you'll get it right. Most people get it right over 75% of the time. You're just hardwired to do it. So remember that if I'm again trying to control a conversation, I want to make sure I'm not glancing upwards and to the left. And you say, well, people don't know that stuff. They don't have to. They were born knowing this stuff. Your kids sense this stuff. All right. And I'll tell you right now, one of the things that I'm actively looking into is, have you guys ever noticed most veterinarians, and even this guy on TV, Cesar Milan, anyway, have you ever noticed some people just have a way with animals? Dogs and cats, just a presence. I think it's all nonverbal. We know that. But I think it's even further than that. I think it's probably like Goldman's saying, I think we're able to sync those brain waves of that dog. Because, you know, I go into the room, and you guys do this too. And you can calm a dog down. You know, I mean, I'm not a dog whisperer or anything like that. I don't want a TV show, but I'm saying you have that presence about you. Something, you're doing something. So nonverbal? Now, a dog doesn't even speak, Hadif. I mean, so what's the dog picking up on? They're picking up on all these other little cues. So this stuff's real. Right? Don't clasp hands behind you. Again, closed body posture. Don't shrug when you're making assertions. You're trying to be declarative. Stephen, this is really important. Why is this important? Well, when you shrug, when you lift up like that, it shows doubt. And it's really natural. Again, I'm going to show you some steps on how you can see if you're doing it. Don't lean over. Don't rest your head on the hands. All of this slouching, it feels good. You know, you sit here and you want to go, this is my exam table, let's just say, and I want to talk to you. I've got to deliver some bad news. You know, and you just feel comfortable. You just feel like, wow, I'm relaxed. It's sending the wrong signal. The person isn't consciously aware. They're just saying, this doctor really isn't that interested. Dr. Rose really wants to be asleep right now. She's just not here. So what should you do? What are the things that you can do? When you walk into that exam room, you better walk in and open it up with a smile. Dan, I don't care how bad it is in New York. I don't care the snow's piled up to the tops of the trees. If you don't enter that room and command it with a smile, turn around and walk back out. Because there's never an excuse. I don't care even if you're delivering the worst news in the world. I don't care if the dog has blood squirting out of its face. You know, you got to go, hey. You know, you give a subtle smile. Somehow you've got to say, I'm making a real connection. A smile is your best tool. Later we're going to talk about the welcome experience. We'll talk about how receptionists must be trained to smile, smile, smile. You've got to smile. Physical contact. We're going to talk more in the next hour about this, but in case you're not here, you need to be doing a handshake and an elbow touch. And I'll leave it at that for now. Next hour we'll talk about why the elbow touch is so important. You need to know the client. I hate this, Judy. I hate this. This is how a lot of doctors enter the room. Oh, hey, Ms. Smith, how are you doing there? Scooter, hey, good, good, good. All right, so what are we here for today? Ah! What do you mean? I'm paying you to know this, dude. You better know it. You better be walking in that room saying, hey, Miss May, good to see you. You know, you better be just warm, effusive, and you better say, I am here for you, because at that moment, they need to be the center of your universe, period. In your brain, you got to be thinking, I am so happy to see this person. And Dan, I'll be honest with you. I got people that transplanted from your state, New York, that sometimes I don't want to see. All right? So, I mean, it is, I mean, not New York, not saying anything about New Yorkers, but you know what I'm saying. There are people that I don't particularly enjoy. I wouldn't go on a picnic with them necessarily on a Sunday afternoon. Okay. However, if I come in with that conscious thought, oh Lord, you know this woman again. Oh, if you go in there, guess what's going to happen? Whole thing falls apart. We're going to talk more in the later. You need to know why they're here. And please, please get the sex right. Please don't call the boy cat a girl and vice versa. It undermines it. I have two beautiful daughters. I figured, you know, when I'm a new father, I was going to be a modern dad. Real laid back, relaxed kind of dad. You know, easy going. You know, I'm a surfer, man. Right? So, I figured all those things that would bother all these other people would never bother me. So, after about a month or so, we began to take our young daughter out into public. Okay, Gary, you might have had the same experience with your children. Take them out. You know, so you're at the mall, you're at Walmart, or wherever. We were at Walmart with our young daughter. Had to pick up some supplies. Mom was taking her out. And this lady comes up to us, and she was a client, and she had heard, bless you, she had heard that we had had a child, but she really didn't know, bless you again. That's all you get, though. That's okay. I have to ration them. There's a lot of people here. She had heard we had a baby, but really didn't know the particulars, right? So she comes up to me, right? And here's my wife, and we're just beaming. She says, oh, Dr. Ward, oh, I'm so glad to see your baby. Oh, it's so wonderful. And we do a little chit-chat exchange, right? And she comes over, and she goes, oh, he looks just like you. Whoa! There is nothing masculine about this beautiful girl. Supermodel potential right here. Do you see this? No ugly dad, beautiful mom here, right? I was a little upset. Now, I didn't say these things to this one, but I was like, very politely, you know, she's a girl. Her name is Madison, you know. And of course, I'm sure the person felt like a heel, and I wanted to kick him with my heel. But the point is, people feel the same way about their pets. And so, I don't know, Daniel, can you tell me a simple way to tell a male cat from a female cat? Yeah, I can't either. I can't figure the thing out unless they've got, you know what, but they never have those, probably, at my clinic. So I'm at a loss. You better know the chart. You better get this right. Because once you do, if you do this, if you walk into the room, you're a tech, you're a receptionist, you're a whomever, and you say the wrong sex, downhill from there. It's called the domino effect. At least that's what we call it down in North Carolina, because once we do one thing wrong, it hits the next domino and the next and the next. And pretty soon, I can't believe how much money this place costs, you know, all because we screwed up the gender. Okay? Simple things. Smile. We'll talk more and more about that. Eye contact. Open hand gestures. I'll talk a little bit right now because we've got 7 minutes. I was going to save this for the next hour, but I'll tell you. I got a little secret I'm going to let you guys in on. And you might have even noticed me doing this around the room. But I'm going to let you guys, this applies mainly to guys, but to girls as well. The handshake is so important, how we shake hands. And I'm going to let you guys in on a secret. And it's called the alpha male handshake. All right? And it's pretty simple, and guys use this all the time, and maybe they're not aware of it, or maybe they don't do it effectively. But if I'm going to meet someone, and I want to demonstrate that I'm in authority, I'm in command, that I am very sure and confident of myself, which can be with many clients, okay? And there's some issues here, but let's say I'm going to meet somebody. So I've never met, you know, I've met you, but let's say I haven't met you before, right? And I want to say I'm a strong guy, you know, I'm an alpha male, you know, I only weigh 135 pounds, but come on, you know, I can run fast and far for a long time. So the alpha male handshake is simply this: palms down, 45 degree angle. Come in. So, Gary, it works like this. You just come in, you say, and I can't do it because I have to have the big warm-up, you know. So you go, hey, how's it going? And you do like that. And instantly I have asserted my dominance over Gary, okay? Now, if Gary is astute, because see, Dan, then when the alpha males try to pull on me, guy at the gym this morning tries to pull it on me, I know the trick, right? So first of all, if I lead, it's harder for him to catch up, but at least meet them in the middle. At least do it. And you instinctively did it, okay? And you're being very polite as well, all right? Now, if you're a female, also remember that the strength of your handshake, when you're shaking hands with your clients and other people, they are sizing you up instantly. I have a client just last week who says she never wants to see one of our new doctors again because of what? Do you know what she automatically dismissed her on? Her handshake, period. Now, then, of course, she unloaded about 18 different things. But how's the first, when you greet someone, the handshake, and that was it, domino effect, it's over. So make sure, women, that you're playing this to your advantage. And I would encourage you, especially if you're meeting a strong guy like Stephen, and he's trying to pull the alpha male over, and you turn that palm down, 45 degree angle, come in there, put him down, baby. And again, I have been completely beaten into submission. I have a redheaded wife, and I, you know. So when she comes up, I'm just like, yes, yes, I'll shake your hand. You know, because I wish my wife were here because she would definitely slap me now. But open hand gestures, when I'm speaking, now think about it. If palm down is dominant and strong, but now I'm trying to communicate with you what I want to say. You see the difference? This is a big deal. So if I'm trying to talk to you guys, I'm going, Amanda, that is a threatening gesture right there. But if I say, Amanda, that's instantly, did you feel a difference there? You probably did because I'm sending out psychic brainwaves, right? Okay. I'm telling you too, right? Open arms, again. Well, you know, I'm going to save the next one because I have another tip for you about what you should be doing with some other parts of your body that are very important. Count with fingers. So, Daniel, when I sit here and I go, really, Mrs. Smith, I'm mainly concerned today about three rule outs. The first rule I'm concerned about is hyperadrenocorticism. I'm actually doing two things at once because I'm doing sweeping gestures. I don't know if you've noticed what I'm doing here. The first thing I'm worried about is hyperadrenocorticism. Basically, that's a disease where the body's making too much of a natural steroid. It's sort of like a cortisone or cortisol in the body. And we're going to do a series of tests to make sure that your pet doesn't have that. The second thing I'm worried about is kidney disease, all right? And kidney disease is very similar to clinical signs. You know, you drink more water, maybe their appetite's off, you know, so forth. But we're going to do some blood and urine tests today that also will help us with the Cushing's disease diagnosis or hyperadrenocorticism. The third thing, whatever it is, okay? And again, if you'll notice, that I combined two things just to speed it up. But if you will use that, it's placeholders for the mind. Because now they don't walk away just thinking, nobody told me about there's going to be other tests or other diseases or whatnot. That is a visual placeholder, not for your conscious mind, for your unconscious mind, which is way smarter than we'll ever be. I mean, there's so much going on. Yes? Is there any issue with how you count fingers? Good point. Yeah. And even amongst Europeans, they tend to count with their thumb a lot, which can be a threatening gesture for Americans, okay? So they do that a lot. No, I would not change your style of counting. you know. So he's saying what he does is he does a downward deflection. I don't have a problem with that. Again, as long as your palm is up and open, I don't have a problem with it. It's easier visually, I think, to do that because, you know, they can, it's harder to see that. If you're going to do a downward, I would make sure you kind of hold that one, too. Yeah, remember it's a placeholder. That's what the experts call it. It's a placeholder effect, and meaning that visually, two, three, so that you now recall one and two. So, and again, I like the fact that you're thinking about it. That's where you're way ahead of the game. Because you'll be stronger just from doing it. And again, sweeping gestures to show there's progress. All right? Sit or stand upright. Always lean slightly forward. I mean, we have everybody seated, which we'll talk more about later. Take notes very sparingly. Again, I'll touch on this in the next hour. Cross your ankles. I'll talk in the next hour about why when you're... any single women out here? Any single women? Okay, only one single woman in this whole bunch? Everybody else in here has spoken, married? Wow, that's amazing. Well, I'll skip that whole part. Because what you do with your feet is very important. Maybe I'll just share with the guys later, okay? Hardeem can't give away all the secrets, can we? Right? All right, so you want to sit down and do all that. Let's talk a little bit about dress. Transparent hair and makeup. In the next hour, we're going to talk a little bit about doctors and what they should be wearing. But I want transparent hair and makeup. You must have standards of appearance in your employee manual. You must say you cannot wear green eyeshadow if you don't believe green eyeshadow is appropriate, which I do not. Okay? I'm talking about like fluorescent green. And we actually, the terminology that we use is complementary tones. So meaning that if you come in with bright orange, you're going to have a hard time selling me because I'm going to need now someone to substantiate that. It's never happened when you just tell people, because what you're doing, all of these things, tattoos, piercing, crazy hairdo and fingernails, all of this is a distraction. Because Stephen, here's what happens. And I've said this a thousand times, but who are our clients by and large? Give me just a women and what age? 35? Well, not national average. Not the national average. Typically now, they are 55 and above females. Okay? $7 trillion controlled by senior citizens. They control everything. Okay? So most of the clients that veterinary, that are spending money on vet services are 55 and above. It's just a matter of the figures. In fact, the 35-year-old, that's the smallest population currently in America. Just to tell you just the facts right now. So, anyway. But that was a good guess. It's a good guess. Okay? So now you're dealing with people that are typically 55 and older. All right? Now, if you have a nose piercing, what are they focused on during the examination, during the history? How'd you get it in there? Does it hurt when you blow your nose? That's what they're fixated on. If they're 25 and they have 8 piercings of themselves, they're like, cool, dude, all right, I like that, man. Okay, that's fine as well, but I'm guessing that's not your... I'm guessing your average client doesn't come in with nose piercings and tattoos on their foreheads that say thug life or whatever, okay? I mean, am I right? I mean, you're in Memphis, Tennessee, man. I was just up there. I didn't see any of that mess going on. Yes, Mary.
I find a lot of the people have, you know, tattoos here.
Yep, any tattoos must be concealed. She says, I find tattoos here, there, everywhere. Yeah, it's a mess. So you've got to say, is it a distraction? And I simply say to my staff, do you want this to get in the way of us helping the pet? Because my staff, just like your staff, Amanda, they're here for the right reason. Okay? All right, I know Asa, we're almost done. Because this is the last slide before we get into the next hour. How do you tell if you're doing this stuff? Quite simply, you better videotape it. You will not take my word for it. I could go around right now and speak with you guys, and I could say this, 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 and this. And you're going to be like, am not. Okay? When it's on videotape, this takes me out of the equation. So we videotape everything, Stephen. You know, and we have a little palm quarter. I mean, they're so small and unobtrusive. I've been doing this hardcore since 98. Back when we had a big VHS, I mean the big shoulder mount. And I've never had a client object to it at all. Why? You're not filming the client. You're just sitting here like where the client sits and you're just filming the staff. It's very, very simple to do. But that is the way you will diagnose frowning. You will diagnose lip biting, playing hands. All these things, Stephen, don't take my word for it. Test yourself. All right. Yes. So I'm going to get... Do I have the client sign and release? No, they're not on the video. Their pet is? The pets have no rights. Yeah. I mean, not, yeah. Hey, wait, we are in Colorado, so we might want to rephrase that. And we got a California person here, so. But as of now, they do not. So, and you're not rebroadcasting this. I mean, you know, people get bent up on the wrong things, you know. Sure, sign a release, man. Do whatever you want to do. You know, jump up and down. But I'm just saying, yeah, I just go say, hey, Ms. Smith, do you mind if we videotape? We're going to videotape the staff day for training. I have never, since 1988, had a person even, oh, no, please, please. Why? Now, we're not videotaping blood and guts, you know, the critical cases. We're doing annual, senior pets, that kind of stuff, dental check-ins. All right, written communication, make sure it's personalized. Make sure that and again, I'll leave on this, read it out loud. If you have a handout, read it out loud. That will solve all of your problems. Okay, Asa is giving me the hook over here. I'll be around for some things, digital images. This is all in your notes pretty much. We take pictures of everything. We give people pictures of everything. You've seen our superstars. I mean, it's been written up on many things. Make sure your website is more than just a business card online. Guys, what year is this, Amanda? 2007, this is Web 2.0 time. It needs to be rich, it needs to be interactive, it needs to be valuable. I'll tell you, Stephen, website, referrals, staff, I mean, it is a big, big time deal. I get solicitations from staff members all over the country saying, I'm going to come to your hospital just based on our website, okay? You need to make sure that you're doing this stuff. All right, that's it. 9:35, thank you very much. Sorry, Asa, you can get me later. Bye.